This is number 0010, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0010. And coming up on this edition, lots of stuff coming your way, including a chat with Howard Fine, who is an acting teacher par excellence and also the author of Fine on Acting, A Vision of the Craft. And he talks about many aspects of acting, including knowing when someone has raw natural talent.
You can sense somebody who's curious, inquisitive, sensorily alert. They walk into a room, that's what we call presence, because all five senses are alive and firing, and you're just drawn to that person. Someone else who's just shut down, closed off, it's got a long way to go before they're ever going to be an actor.
We'll also talk to Scott Neary, who is a comic actor and professional juggler, who is teaching people how to juggle. But why is it important for him to teach?
My juggling dynasty must continue. I'm not going to have kids because I wear condoms. So I have to pass on my legacy somehow, and I'm going to do it through juggling.
We'll also check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
Plus, there's Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
Neither rain nor snow nor sleet nor hail will stop Major League Baseball from ruining a great sport. Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know, your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. You're going to want to stick around for my two-minute tirade. It's coming up later on, right here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And the guests later this week, the person who told you that this was show number 0010, is broadcaster Al Randall, who is also the VP of programming for the Smooth Jazz station that you can find online at www.solace.fm. That's www.solace.fm. And you can find links to the Smooth Jazz station. Give it a listen. You can find links on my website at peteranthonyholder.com. And thank you very much to Al, Mr. Al Randall, Uncle Al the Kitty's pal, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Speaking of which, there's no time like the present. Let's get right to the stuff. And we have a series of stories that comes up quite often. People trying to steal animals and hide them on their body. We start off with a story from Oslo. A man was caught by Norwegian customs carrying a tarantula in his bag and a further 14 royal pythons and 10 albino or albino leopard geckos taped to his body. The 22-year-old Norwegian was stopped on a routine check at the Kristiansand Customs after arriving on a ferry from Denmark. Customs found the tarantula before deciding to give him a full body search that revealed 14 stockings, one for each snake, taped to his torso, or at least around his torso. Reptile smuggling is not uncommon in Norway, which prohibits people from holding many reptile species as pets, but an office manager at the customs office was quoted as saying in the press that they were horrified by this recent catch. This customs officer goes on to say, customs officers quickly realized the man was smuggling animals because his whole body was in a constant motion. Oh, too bad that's not on YouTube, huh? When the man dropped his pants, the officers found 10 cans taped to his legs, each containing a lizard. The man is still being held by police. The reptiles were handed over to a security firm until Norwegian authorities can decide what to do with them. So there you go. That's all the way in Oslo, but that by no means is the only case. Although that's probably the most ambitious case we've had in a while of someone smuggling or trying to steal something. But let's go to Jacksonville Beach, Florida. It's one thing for shoplifters to hide plunder in their pants, but a live ferret? Okay, I've seen or heard stories about this, but not in this context. Police said a homeless man in North Florida did just that. He had made it out of the door before being challenged. Rodney Bolton, age 38, was charged with theft over the $129 animal that police said he took from a pet store in Jacksonville Beach. A 17-year-old witness confronted Bolton in the parking lot and was bitten by the animal after the man allegedly shoved it in the teen's face. That confrontation makes the ferret a special weapon under Florida law, so Bolton also faces battery charges for dangerously wielding the animal. There you go. Speaking of laws, let's talk about the finer points of the law, shall we? Judge James Morley dismissed animal cruelty charges in September against former Morristown, New Jersey police officer Robert Malia Jr., who had been caught in 2006 attempting to sexually gratify himself using calves' mouths. Okay, let's stop here for a second. You have some sort of fetish, and you need to excite yourself in some way, shape, or form, and you've probably exhausted many other ways of doing it, and you're sitting around thinking, I wonder what it would be like in a calf's mouth. Think of the thought process that goes along with this story. That's the part that scares me the most. Anyway, because the state has no anti-bestiality statute, Malia was charged with animal cruelty. But Judge Morley said he was uncertain whether the acts were indeed cruel or merely confusing. He reasoned that calves would normally recognize an appendage in their mouths as a prelude to food. If a calf could speak, said Judge Morley, and now there's a man on the bench speaking on behalf of cows. If a calf could speak, said Judge Morley, it might merely say, where's the milk? I'm not getting any milk. That's in the court record somewhere, folks. I can't make this stuff up if I tried. Man, oh man, oh man. Okay. Moving right along, I have another cow story for you. Well, it's sort of like a cow story. Okay, it's not even close to a cow story, but there are cow references. It was a strange day at the water treatment plant in the small town of Tonawanda, New York. A man dressed in a cow suit, yes, I said a cow suit, and soaking wet, walked into the plant asking for help, saying he had just driven his car into the Niagara River. He claimed his GPS device told him to take a right to get onto the highway, but instead he found himself driving right off a boat dock and into the river. Police were called, and amazingly, they found out that alcohol was indeed involved, and the guy had a 0.20 blood alcohol level, which is over twice the legal limit. So he was arrested on an aggravated DWI charge. And believe it or not, as much as I tried to find out more information on this story, there is absolutely no explanation as to why he was in a cow costume. Now, the question I have to ask is, did he drink all that alcohol and then get in a cow costume? Or did he get into a cow costume totally sober and then drank himself into oblivion? We may never know. Moving right along, police in Commerce, Texas arrested a man in September and charged him with twice approaching a female clerk at Commerce Hardware Store, holding up a piece of paper with powder on it and blowing it into her face to provoke sneezing. Said Police Chief Kerry Cruz, he becomes aroused by female sneezing. In my entire career, I've never heard of anything like this. Safe bet. Very, very safe bet. Speaking of oddball people, in Boca Raton, Florida, the head chef and manager of the Pizza Time restaurant, Mark DeCrapio, just lost it. Completely lost it. It seems one too many orders for the restaurant's mozzarella caprese salad pushed him over the edge. When waitress Kathy Voltaggio hung yet another ticket for the popular salad on the rack, DeCrapio allegedly yelled out, "If I get one more ticket for mozzarella caprese, I swear to God I will shoot you in the forehead." DeCrapio then allegedly slammed a gun inside a holster on the countertop and reportedly said, "Now you see I'm serious? I'll put a bullet right in your forehead." The waitress called the police. 51-year-old DiCrapio was arrested, and there was indeed no more mozzarella caprese salads that day. One questions how soon there will be. Because the chef's going away for some time. On to Savannah, Georgia. Georgia police said a misdialed number led two strangers to trade hostile calls and text messages before arranging to meet where one shot the other. Savannah Chatham police spokesman Veda Lamar Nichols said that an unidentified man faces an aggravated assault charge. The 22-year-old suspect was jailed after a 24-year-old man was shot in a CVS parking lot at around 2:30 a.m. Nichols said the victim was taken to Memorial University Medical Center in serious condition. She said the two didn't know each other, but began arguing through phone calls and text messages after a misdialed number and arranged to meet in the store's parking lot. The suspect was taken to the Chatham County Jail. Nichols said his vehicle was damaged during the incident. Whatever happened to sorry, wrong number? Are those days gone? We have road rage, text rage, and phone rage all in the same story. Yeah, nice. Okay, moving right along. Since the World Series is still going on, let's have a baseball reference story, shall we? Actually, it's a historical baseball reference story. Okay, actually, this has nothing to do with baseball, but it has something to do with a baseball great. Okay, just follow along with me. In 2002, following an acrimonious family debate, the head of the late baseball slugger Ted Williams was cryogenically frozen in the hope that science will someday learn how to revive dead people. An employee of the Arizona lab that stores the head recently disclosed some inside shenanigans, according to a September report in the New York Daily News. According to the employee, to keep Williams' head from sticking to the inside of its storage carton, the head was placed on an empty bumblebee tuna fish can inside the container, but the can itself then stuck to the head and had to be whacked off with a monkey wrench. Is this any way to treat the guy who's the last person to bat 400 in a season? Is it, really? Since the lab's work is secretive, only first-person reports are likely to emerge on this story. And as we can pretty well guess, Ted's not talking. And finally in the Stuff File, at least in this segment of the Stuff File, we go to Oregon for our next story. Police arrested a 56-year-old man accused of threatening another man with a corkscrew at a public restroom in Riverfront Commemorative Park. A witness told police he saw a man holding a corkscrew in his hand while kicking the bathroom door and threatening to kill the man inside. No one was injured. Officers arrested the man on charges of menacing, unlawful use of a weapon, and disorderly conduct. They confiscated the corkscrew. I guess there'll be no drinking for him. Okay, on to our first guest on the Stuff File program. On the line with us right now is legendary acting teacher Howard Fine. He has written a book called Fine on Acting, A Vision of the Craft. He joins us on the line from California. Hi, Howard. How are you?
Hi, Peter. Good to be with you.
It's nice to talk to you once again. We had you on the old radio show, and we talked a lot about acting at the time, and I believe at one point I asked the question, is it a situation where almost anybody can be taught how to act? So I'm going to reverse that question since you've written the book. Are there people who shouldn't act?
Well, you know what I like to think in terms of the anybody can do it and everybody should do it. Whether everybody should do it professionally is another thing. You know, it's just like baseball. Can anybody play baseball? Yeah. The operative word is well.
Ah.
So you can play it for fun. But do you want to try to go for a major league career if you don't have those skills? Maybe not.
What made you write this book now?
It had to do with my 50th birthday, Peter. When I hit 50, something happened, and I thought, you know, I think I might know something. I don't know where that came from, but I realized that I'd spent more than 25 years devoted to the teaching of acting, and that maybe it was time to put some things down.
We hear actors, especially some of the more established actors, talk about some of the great acting teachers of years gone by. And I'm just curious to know, as far as the technique of acting is concerned, is there anything new under the sun?
Yes, because as we were chatting a while ago about media changing, the challenges facing actors are constantly changing. So you have to adapt. It's not unlike medicine in a certain way. The foundations have been laid, but there are constantly new challenges, and you have to develop the science accordingly.
As an acting teacher, there are different types of people. Do you change what you do depending upon the student you come across?
I change my bedside manner. The acting technique is the same, but there are some folks who need a good swift kick in the behind to get them going. And there are some, if you did that to them, they would fall apart. So I'm careful to gauge who I'm talking to.
When do you know when somebody's, for lack of a better term, got it? Like when somebody walks into your acting studio and you know, is there a way you know that they've got it and you just have to basically hone that pearl, as the saying goes, or... Is it something that always has to be taught?
It's both, but you just asked a great question. What is it that tells me that somebody has got it? It's the degree of their aliveness. You can sense somebody who's curious, inquisitive, sensorily alert. They walk into a room. That's what we call presence, because all five senses are alive and firing, and you're just drawn to that person. Someone else who's just shut down, closed off, has got a long way to go before they're ever going to be an actor.
Is it more difficult to teach acting to an adult as opposed to a child, or vice versa?
I each has their own challenge. Children, not my particular area, although if you can get children, and I don't mean the stage type of children where the parents have pushed them into it and they're precocious little monsters. I mean, really, kids whose imaginations are just free. It's amazing what they can, what they're not held back by. That sometimes happens later. But my real expertise is with adults. If you give me somebody who's truly open-minded, it's amazing what we can do. Some of the time, I'm competing with what people already think they know, and that's hard.
Are there people who should not take acting classes? And I ask that question only because every once in a while somebody comes along who, again, seems to have it, maybe just a natural talent, and I don't know if teaching might hinder what is naturally there. Is that
bad,
a fair assessment?
Bad training, yes. Bad training will do that. The bad training is going to hurt everybody, natural, unnatural, period. Good training, no. The goal of technique, at least as I teach it, is spontaneous life. It does not replace instinct. It gives a way for the actor who has natural instincts to consistently get back to it. Even if somebody's naturally gifted, it doesn't mean they can do take after take after take or eight shows a week on Broadway. That requires a craft and a technique. So, yeah, they might have a natural aptitude and the gods align one time and bang, there it is. But without a real process, they're not going to be able to do that again and again.
So in other words, I'll give you a classic example. Someone comes along that no one's ever heard of, like a Jennifer Hudson, and walks off with an Academy Award. Now what?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. And she was lucky that the movie musical was coming along at that very moment for her. But the story will be told in other parts, and we'll see.
One of the things about your book, and again, the book is called Fine on Acting, A Vision of the Craft, is you have a foreword written by Michael Chiklis. And I'll just mention a portion of that. You've purchased this book because you either aspire to be an actor or want to be a better one. Either way, you've made a wonderful decision. That's a great quote, and I guess it answers the question of who should be buying your book.
Well, yeah, I hope it works for both experienced actors and for people just starting out, and even for people curious about acting, because there's a self-discovery process that's involved, and I think everybody will get a glimpse behind the magician's curtain if they've ever been curious about it by reading the book.
So are some of the techniques that you teach in acting school, would they be applicable to people in their everyday lives? if they weren't involved in acting.
Yes. There are certain things, for example, maybe you're not an actor, but almost everybody has had to give a presentation at work and has dealt with self-consciousness, nerves, how to cope with those things. Almost everybody has to do some form of speaking, and the book will certainly help you in any of those areas, as well as just for your self-confidence.
You touched on something a little earlier, talking about the fact that somebody has to do a show 8 nights a week or 8 shows a week. How do you keep it fresh when you're playing the same role for a long period of time on stage?
Great question, Peter. That's where technique comes in. And the antidote to what we call anticipating, which is thinking ahead because you're used to it, is expectation. Let's say we have this exchange in a script. I tell you that I'm going to introduce you to my roommate.
Right.
You now form a picture in your mind, a speculation, an expectation of who you think that might be. And then I tell you that he's quite charming. Now you've just learned male, okay. And then I tell you, and really, for a Pembroke Welsh Corgi, very friendly. Okay, so now we run the scene 10 times. I tell you I'm going to introduce you to my roommate. You're already picturing the Corgi. You have to go back each time to your speculations and expectations and make them different than what you're going to learn.
Uh-huh.
Then you allow the new information to hit you freshly every single time. So the antidote to anticipating is expectation other than what's going to happen.
Now, what if you do have the acting techniques down, but you're working opposite a less than adequate actor?
Which happens.
which I can imagine could happen. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, it definitely happens. Well, what you have to do is this. And sometimes actors have to go in and read opposite casting directors at auditions who don't read very well as well. So the same thing applies. You have to make yourself vulnerable to the person who is saying it to you. So even if they're saying it to you badly, even if I'm saying to you, I want you out of my life, even if I'm that bad, if you make me the most important person in your life, then you'll become vulnerable to me and to what I'm saying, whether or not I read those lines with any force. The fact that I am saying them will affect you. So is it the best? No, the best is two great actors working opposite each other. But you can function when you don't have the great actor.
Do you really have to get inside your character so that you, especially I'm talking in a stage situation now, do you really have to get inside your character to the point that you can handle anything that might go wrong in the play?
Yes. You absolutely do, because as the old saying goes, anything that can go wrong will go wrong. I've had students with the doors not opening, other actors not on cue on stage when they're supposed to be. Anything can happen. However, if you know how to stay alive as that character, you can probably handle almost anything. The worst thing is if you don't deal with it. One of my students went to see a play, and they were all having dinner, and somebody knocked over a pitcher of ice water, and it went all over the cast. And he couldn't wait to come back and tell me this. And he said they went on having dinner as if it wasn't happening. And that's because they were frozen. They didn't deal with it. The minute somebody would acknowledge it, pick it up, clean it, it goes away for the audience. It's when the actor is thrown off game plan and can't cope with it, tries to pretend it's not happening, that it gets worse.
And these are just some of the things people can learn by actually picking up your book.
Yes, I hope so.
The book is called Fine on Acting, A Vision of the Craft by Howard Fine. It's written along with Chris Freeman. And I thank you very, very much, Howard, for taking the time to be on our program with us once again.
Always a pleasure, Peter. Anytime.
Acting teacher Howard Fine, author of Fine on Acting, A Vision of the Craft. You can find the book at bookstores, and you can also go to my website at peteranthonyholder.com, click on the What's On page for this show, which is 0010, and you can order it directly from either amazon.com or amazon.ca. At my website, you'll also find links to Howard's website, which is howardfine.com. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about if the rains don't cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. You're listening to The Stuff File, available at peteranthonyholder.com or as a subscription from iTunes.
And still to come on the program, we will check in with a comic actor who's also a professional juggler, and he teaches juggling. We'll check our mailbag, plus there's Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation, and we also have an idiot of the day. Plus, of course, lots more stuff, including stuff right here, right now. We go to the Far East for our next story, Shanghai, to be exact. Five Filipino transvestites. Boy, if I had a nickel for every sentence I started off like that, huh? Yeah, five Filipino transvestites have gone on trial in Shanghai, accused of drugging men with adulterated foods before robbing them in a city with a reputation for an adventurous nightlife. Prosecutors told a Shanghai court the five men dressed as women and, after leading the victims into taxis or hotel rooms, induced them to eat chocolate and other foods laced with sleeping drugs. The men then robbed their victims, taking mobile phones, credit cards, and a Rolex watch. They then used the cards to buy perfume and gold. Interesting. The five men, aged from 26 to 30, were accused of committing the crimes three times from late last year to February and were detained by police in March. The men pleaded guilty to the charges and expressed remorse for the victims. The court will give a verdict at a later date, according to news reports. Five men dressed as women. There's a sitcom for you. Something Fox would show. Moving right along, adventures in the bush. In June, after a monitored endangered marsupial, a walleye, was killed in West Australia, scientists set out to recover the expensive radio collar transmitter that it was wearing. But as they approached the signal, a 6-foot-long python swallowed the animal and the collar whole. The scientists captured the snake, intending to wait for the collar to pass through, but poachers broke into the Department of Environment and Conservation's shelter and stole the python, surely intending to sell it. According to the June report in the West Australian, the scientists, aided by authorities, eventually picked up the radio transmission again, arrested one poacher, and freed the snake from its impending life of captivity. Oh, the adventures of snakes. Meanwhile, since we do the Stuff File program only once, maybe occasionally twice a week, unlike the radio show, which we did every night, the Stuff File stories tend to pile up, and sometimes I have stories that linger for several weeks. Got a couple of those right now. I just can't seem to get rid of them, so I just put them all here together. Two of them, as a matter of fact, come from Taipei. And by the way, if you are in the Taipei area, or even not, don't forget to listen to the Happy Station Show, which is hosted by Keith Perrin, which you can find on Shortwave, which comes from Taipei. I just thought I'd bring that up as we move along. Anyway, Taiwanese authorities said that they are encouraging the public to pick up garbage, including dog excrement, for rewards in the first move of its kind to clean up the environment. The Environmental Protection Bureau in central Taichung City said it is offering a gift voucher of 100 Taiwan dollars, that's about $3 U.S., for 1 kilogram or 2 pounds of dog excrement. Oh, what fun. To collect vouchers, citizens must haul the canine droppings and other garbage to specified locations. Now, It's one thing to carry this stuff to a specified location. How would you like to be the person who gets the job of actually receiving this stuff? Honey, how is your day? Same crappy day as it is always, dear. Same crappy day. Anyway, moving right along with the story, here's a quote. "We hope the people will help clean up and conserve the environment so that we can have a clean city by offering the rewards." The Bureau is also giving vouchers for picking up plastic, paper, and styrofoam cups, as well as plastic bags. There you go. And still with Taiwan, a Taiwanese man has been nabbed for allegedly robbing three convenience stores, saying he was upset that nobody had celebrated his birthday. Oh, pauvre bébé. The 33-year-old, identified only by his surname, Tsang, said his erratic behavior was prompted by the birthday blues. According to the police, Tsang admitted to suffering from psychiatric disorders, and he had a criminal record for theft. Tsang, who robbed the three stores in Taipei within 23 minutes, was found drunk and carrying about 13,200 Taiwan dollars, that's about $410 U.S. in cash, at the time of his arrest. See, people get touchy about not having others remember their birthday. I solved that problem completely. No one knows when my birthday is. It's a state secret. I've never even told my parents. Okay, moving right along. A zoo in Gaza has got around animal import restrictions by dyeing stripes on donkeys to make zebras. The owner of the Marah Land Zoo in Gaza City said he had used masking tape and black hair dye applied with a paintbrush to disguise the white females. Mohammed Borghati said it would have cost him about £25,000, or about $55,000, to bring in a real zebra via smuggling tunnels. "The first time we used paint, but it didn't look good," said Mohammed. "The children don't know, so we call them zebras, and they are happy to see something new." Lying to them at such a young age. It's where it begins, you know. All the real animals at the zoo, including monkeys and a tigress, have been smuggled under the border at great expense, he said. The two genuine zebras died of starvation earlier this year during the Israeli military offensive. The animal restrictions are part of the Israeli blockade of Gaza imposed in an attempt to reduce rocket attacks and weaken the leadership of Hamas. So, there you go. And finally, hey guys, having trouble with the ladies these days? Then get yourself on the first plane to Singapore and sign up for Derek Ho's Secret Skills Magic School. The 27-year-old magician opened up the school just 3 months ago and conducts a course called The Art of Seduction Magic. He claims the tricks he teaches can help men woo women and that the course has been a hit with the guys. You'll pay $150 for a 2-hour session in which you'll be taught 10 tricks. There's one trick that is supposed to enable you to hug your dream girl and another that would ensure she gives you a call. Ooh. Of course, a lot of it is in the presentation. He says the tricks have to be done with flair, and the words used should give the woman the impression that the guy is mysterious and attractive. But it does seem to be working. One recent graduate, 17-year-old Ruben Lakshmanan, said his newfound tricks help boost his confidence when he approached girls, and that by using the tricks, he managed to get the phone numbers of two young ladies while waiting at a train station. Ah, the magic of magic. Maybe it also works with juggling. Juggling is the best way to be the life of the party. We have on the line right now our next guest, who is professional juggler Scott Neary, and he teaches juggling classes at the Cirque School in Los Angeles. Hey, Scott, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, Peter.
Thanks for being on the show with us. You were on our old radio show a little while ago talking about some other things that you're working on. But you also, as I mentioned in the intro, you juggle. And now you're trying to teach it to the rest of the world. Why is that, as opposed to just keeping it to yourself, as it were?
My juggling dynasty must continue.
Ah.
I'm not going to have kids because I wear condoms. So I am going to... I have to pass on my legacy somehow, and I'm going to do it through juggling.
Gotcha. Now, is juggling that something that everyone can do?
Yeah, pretty much anybody can do it. If they have hands, they can do it. So to see if you can juggle, go ahead and try to clap your hands. If you can do that, you can probably juggle.
I was about to say, I remember when I was a kid, some people couldn't even use, remember the old, you're a little younger than me, I don't know if you had paddle ball when you were a kid, but I know people who couldn't figure out how to do paddle ball, which again is also a bit of eye-hand coordination. I figure if you can't do that, you can't juggle. Or am I wrong?
Right. Well, it's some people are just more prone to quitting. I think that's the problem. I get people that I teach that say that they can't ever learn to juggle, and that's before I teach them, and that's before I teach them. And it's a thing that you have to practice, and you have to be concentrated on it, and you have to concentrate on the right kinds of things. Well, and that's why having a real teacher in front of you is really helpful.
Well, what is the stumbling block? If people say they can't juggle, what is it about juggling that they seem to find most difficult or the mental block that they can't seem to get around initially?
Okay, here's a lesson for life, everybody. Failure is part of success. And people have a big problem with that. Like, people will come up to me, see me juggling in a park, just practicing, and all I'm doing is dropping and dropping and dropping. That's what practicing juggling is. You just drop a lot. And people come up to me and say, oh, I could never do that. I would just drop. Because people are taught that if they fail at something, they should stop trying it. Or they think that they let failure get to them too much. So when I'm teaching somebody how to juggle, I'm like constantly going, that was good. Did you see how many throws you got before you dropped? That's the game, is just like, is thinking about how much progress you're making and not thinking about the failure, because the failure is constant and it's going to happen. And that's what people have a big problem with. They don't want to look stupid.
How old were you when you started juggling?
I learned when I was 8, and then I started really practicing when I was 15. Now I'm 30 years old.
Okay, so that brings to the question, can you teach an old dog new tricks? Is it ever too late to learn how to juggle?
No, I'm teaching a 45-year-old lesbian how to juggle right now.
Juggle what?
She juggles batteries. No, she juggles, I don't know. She juggles balls. I'm teaching like all kinds of different people. I'm teaching a 12-year-old baseball player how to juggle. He said it's helped his batting, his batting average. And he found out from a pro athlete that he should learn how to juggle to help his coordination. Like, people learn for all kinds of different reasons. It's pretty cool.
I am reminded of when somebody learns to be a waiter or waitress and they're carrying a tray with glasses of water or cups of coffee on it. The thing that they're always told is, don't focus on the liquid, just walk, because when you focus on the liquid too much, that's when you start to spill them. Is the same process in juggling the same way? Some people focus too much on what they're doing as opposed to just naturally doing it?
Yeah, that can happen. I taught private lesson this morning, and she just kept thinking about it. I said, just do it, just keep trying it. Because part of it is getting muscle memory. And then you can just, like, you can, like I said earlier, you can focus on the wrong thing. So if you keep an important thing to do is, like, when you're learning any sport, is keep shifting your mind to focus on different things. And then you'll let your body kind of gain the ability. And you can use your mind some in the process. Well, but if you don't know how to do something and you're trying to correct your body with your mind, then you're correcting it in the wrong way. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. Well, speaking of the mind, I've read recently stories that juggling actually helps the brain.
Right. There are some studies in London and some studies in the United States of America also, which has colleges, surprisingly. And The studies say that people can expand their gray matter in their brain by practicing juggling. And it was earlier thought that you couldn't grow gray matter.
So from that perspective, maybe it is actually something that people who are older should pick up.
Yeah, maybe. Old people don't usually have problems with gray matter on their heads. Gray hair. I'm just joking. But yeah, they could use some brains, definitely.
Okay. Now, I should mention the website, which is losangelesjuggler.com. And again, you are teaching people how to juggle. For those who are not in the Los Angeles area, I mean, I'm all the way up here in Canada. What can I do if I want to learn how to juggle? Can going to your website help me?
Yeah, if you go to losangelesjuggler.com, there's a DVD also for sale. I made a DVD. There are a few juggling videos out that'll help you learn how to juggle, and you're welcome to buy any of those, but you'd be stupid because my DVD is awesome. It takes you through part of the lesson, and then it gives you a menu, so the menu can help you with whatever your flaws are, whatever you're having problems with. It'll help you realign yourself and then work toward the next step. And my process also breaks down juggling into really small steps. They're also jokes. I'm really handsome. And if you flip over the disc and put it back in your DVD, you get an additional disc read error for free.
And the only thing you've left out now is you haven't come up with a juggling game for the Wii.
Oh, I have one. No. It's called We Get Beat Up.
The website is losangelesjuggler.com. That's www.losangelesjuggler.com. And people can find you not only at the website, but they can find you on Facebook, Scott Neary, which is N-E-R-Y, and also on Twitter. Scott, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on with us once again, and keep juggling.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for calling. See you soon.
Juggler and actor Scott Neary. Again, you can check out his website at losangelesjuggler.com. You can find all the links to guests like Scott by going to the What's On page on my website, peteranthonyholder.com. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time to check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And we have just one item I want to get to in the Stuff File mailbag portion of the program right here, right now. It's an email that came in to us from a fellow by the name of Ed. Ed says, I listened to you for many years working the night shift as a meteorologist for Environment Canada. After retiring, I often wished your radio program was available as a podcast so I wouldn't have to stay up so late to listen to you and your interesting interviews. I wanted my wish to come true, but I assure you, I did not want it to come about in the way that it did. Oh, so you're the guy. I'm willing to give it up if you manage to find another interesting paying job, but in the meantime, I plan to enjoy your podcast whenever they come my way. Good luck and take good care. And P.S., I hope to hear you with the Gabby Cabby again from time to time. I promise you, Ed, even though apparently you're responsible for my demise at that other place, I will get in contact with the Gabby Cabby, and we'll probably have him on the program at some point. Do stay tuned. And just to mention, this is, of course, 0010, as I've mentioned several times now, the program, which means that if you do the math, then you know that 9 programs preceded it. I bring up the point because with each show that I've done, the hits get a little higher, which means that the audience is getting a little bigger. So to those of you who are new to the show, remember, you can always go back and hear the shows that you've missed. And please, please, please tell all your friends about the show so that we can grow the audience even bigger. You can find it on my website, which is peteranthonyholder.com. And you can also find it on my blog, which you can find the links to on my website. And you can subscribe to it on iTunes. Plus, it's available at radioforall.net. Hopefully there will be other places that you will be able to find it and it will be available at, but more on that at a later date. And for those of you who get it via iTunes, feel free to leave a review of the show at the site. That would be much appreciated. If you have any questions, by the way, about the show or of me, you can drop me a line, drop me an email. You can email me at peter@peteranthonyholder.com. You could also find me at Twitter at twitter.com/PA Holder. And you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PA Holder. And for those of you who are on Facebook, let me remind you that there is a Stuff File group that you can join. I encourage you to do so. And that's the mailbag. This is the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve Areno?
I gotta tell you, I'm happy to be talking to you. Boy, that was awful, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. By the way, I tried calling you on the weekend because I saw an aerial shot of the football game. ABC was covering the Missouri football game.
Yeah, with Brent Musburger. Yes,
exactly.
Yes. Texas and it was Missouri, I think. Yeah, I was there. I was sitting there enjoying the press box because it was more comfortable than a with Missouri on the field.
I was trying to get you when the aerial shots were on because I wanted you to wave, but
is that so?
You weren't answering your phone.
Jeez, I didn't hear it ring.
Well, actually,
it was so noisy. Okay. Truth be told, we have glass in the press box separating us from the throngs, so I would have heard it. I for some reason I didn't hear it. I don't know why.
Well, I think it was turned off because it went straight to voicemail.
Oh, did it really? Perhaps that's what happened then.
But bottom line,
I apologize for that because I would have waved. I wanted you to see me.
Exactly. Did you at least enjoy the game?
No, it was. I'm telling you, the truth of the matter is that this wasn't even a contest. The Texas Longhorns are so good.
Right.
I mean, really, they are so good. I mean, if this was Star Wars. No, I'm not going to go there. Who had a better chance of winning? But, no, it just wasn't good. It wasn't good.
Okay. Well, I don't want to talk about sports right now. Maybe
I know you don't. Maybe, you've done sports before.
Maybe later we'll discuss it. I don't know.
We might just get into that a little later. It won't be football, though.
But what do you have for us this week?
Okay, let's see. Dateline, Lakefront, Illinois.
That'll be the land of Lincoln.
Sure is. You know, there's a major scandal with the Lakefront Marathon in Lakefront, Illinois. The woman who finished the 26-mile trek the fastest, 23-year-old Cassie Peller, was disqualified, I tell you, disqualified shortly after the race for accepting a water bottle from a friend outside of the official water stations. So, the second-place winner, 27-year-old Jennifer Goebel, was named the new winner, but wait! She only retained the title for 2 days until race photos later showed her with an iPod tucked into her waistband and her shorts. And she admitted using the device. Oh, for shame. This apparently is a major violation of the USA track and field rule that applies only to elite runners in the Lakefront Marathon. So now the third place finisher, Karina Kennitz, has been named the official winner. How about that, huh?
No Rosie Ruiz?
Apparently not. Everybody here played by the rules, or at least they thought they did, but apparently they didn't.
Okay.
I hate it. Mm-hmm. Dateline, Lawrence, Kansas.
That'll be the Sunshine State.
Try saying that again twice,
yeah,
yes.
That'll be the Sunshine State.
Or the Jayhawk State.
Or the Jayhawk. I should have chosen that one.
I know. A 21-year-old man was so drunk he needed an ambulance to get home. Unfortunately, in this case, he stole the ambulance and drove it home himself. Worse, the ambulance was parked outside a business where its crew was responding to a real medical emergency. Our drunk friend led police on what was described as a brief, low-speed chase, a la OJ, I guess. He was arrested on charges of theft of the ambulance as well as driving under the influence. See, you're not supposed to do that.
You know,
people know that.
I knew you were going to bring up OJ. And they should stop calling them just low-speed chases, because that's three words.
It's an OJ.
It's an OJ. Bingo. There you go.
I think it works for me.
Works for me, too.
Dateline, Sevierville, Tennessee.
That would be the Volunteer States.
One of my neighbors.
Is something severe in Sevierville?
No, it's just, it's actually, in French it would be Sevier, you see, but they pronounce it Sevier.
Okay.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
Gotcha.
Wonderful little town. I've actually been through it, sadly. But anyway, police said two Campbell County newlyweds were arrested on their wedding night, not for doing what you think, but for burglarizing the Sevierville Chapel where they were married. Brian Dykes and Mindy McGee were married at the Angels View Wedding Chapel at the Black Bear Ridge Resort. Following the wedding, the couple rented a cabin at the resort. According to the Sevier County Sheriff, an employee noticed the couple's car back outside the chapel around 1 a.m., and a lockbox with cash was missing. Deputies found the couple at a restaurant where they confessed and turned over the missing $500. They're being held. They're in trouble. Deep trouble. A young married couple. I wonder if they consummated the marriage, because they clearly consummated the crime.
You know, they always announce weddings, wedding parties by the name of the couple involved, the last names of the couple involved, especially when there's a reception hall where there are a lot of weddings going on.
Dykes McGee.
Dykes McGee. I'm sure somebody got punched out just saying that out loud.
I know. Look out. Oh, jeez. Somebody just whacked me. Okay, I did that on purpose. Nobody whacked me. I'm making that up.
Okay.
Okay. Dateline, St. Francis, Minnesota.
Oh, that'd be the Gopher State.
It is the Gopher State. You know, you might want to think twice about going streaking anytime soon, because I know that's something you do, Peter. The once silly fad might now be considered a sex crime and a label that would be attached to you as a sex offender. Just ask a 17-year-old boy who streaked at a recent St. Francis High School football game in St. Francis. While a few students have been disciplined for streaking at three Saints football games this season, one of the teenagers could be charged with criminal sexual conduct because he exposed himself to children under the age of 16. Police Chief Jeff Harapat says it's no laughing matter, and this isn't the type of behavior that he and the others want to shrug off as kids will be kids. School officials received calls from disgusted parents complaining that they brought their child to a G-rated event, and look what it turned into. And for some on the football team, the streaking has become a sore point. Offensive lineman Nick Mulcair said, "Sometimes the fans are cheering more for the streakers than they are for us. I really don't like it." Maybe if they played better than Missouri did against Texas.
Wow. They're just in the mood to run in the nude.
Oh, yes, they call him the streak.
Ah, fastest thing on 2 feet.
He likes to show off his physique. All right, let's move on.
Good old Ray Stevens moments there for us, for those who remember
the
streak. Yeah,
I know, quite a guy, you know, performing in Branson on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's true, yep.
Dateline, Little Rock, Arkansas.
That'll be the land of Bill.
Or the natural state, or
the land of opportunity.
Yeah, like heck. Anyway, police in Little Rock have arrested a 23-year-old man after he dropped his own wallet while trying to rob a man at gunpoint at the victim's home. This would-be robber apparently got nervous and fled before taking anything, but then later phoned the victim and told him to return the lost wallet to a nearby service station. Of course, the victim called police, who found the suspect at the service station and arrested him after a brief foot chase. Now, tell me you didn't see how this one was going to end.
I saw how this one was going to end, yeah.
Boy, yeah, I think you too.
Yeah, but you know, there's always one thing.
Peter? What is it?
There's always one thing that I know is going to end in a certain way.
What would that be?
This segment with you having a tirade of some sort.
I'm going to have one today too. Of course, you were right. You were right.
Like clockwork.
It is like clockwork, and you know, Peter, it is time, as you mentioned, for my 2-minute tirade. And when I get angry, I take keyboard in hand and. Today, I just want to talk to you about, well, baseball. You know, seeing as though the baseball world is focused on the World Series, I thought I'd go there. Call me madcap, Peter, but after a season of enjoying baseball played in the sunshine or in the twilight at reasonable times, we're playing baseball in the dark of night, perhaps in the rain, maybe even in the snow by the time the World Series is over, because television dictates that games be played between 8 and 11 East Coast time, and as much as possible within that time period for folks on the West Coast, too. You know, I remember when I was in Washington for 8 years, and I asked someone I knew from ABC why Monday night football games started at 9 o'clock Eastern time. Well, Peter, he told me it was all about TV. And then he said he wanted me watching the game at 10:45 Eastern time, but that if I were still watching at 11:05 Eastern time, it didn't matter. I might as well be dead. The only butts in the seats that matter are those tuned in between 8 and 11 on the East Coast and the West Coast. look, I live in the Central Time Zone, and I can't stay up to watch the baseball games, and I have an hour less than you guys. Games start late for you. They start an hour earlier for me. I just can't imagine being a kid and trying to stay up to watch America's national pastime. Like me, Peter, you're old enough to remember running home from school to watch the last four or five innings of the World Series or the League Championship Series. Nowadays, the kids might as well dawdle because the game won't start until about 4 or 5 hours after they get home, and the kids are getting ready for bed. It is nuts. As a baseball fan whose beloved Boston Red Sox and the St. Louis Cardinals were knocked out of the playoffs early, I have more or less lost interest in baseball this year. Frankly, if the games are halted or postponed by rain or snow or anything else nature can dish up, I wouldn't care one iota. Sure, I want to see the Yankees lose, but I really don't care to stay up until all hours of the night to find out whether that happens.
Well said, sir. Well said. And I don't want to wait till November either.
Yeah, that's another thing. We could do without that, okay? Yeah.
You know, when we were kids, they used to have something called, what was it? Oh, yeah, the doubleheader. And therefore, the season actually ended. Yes. I believe it was a baseball player for the Chicago Cubs. What was his name? Said, let's play two.
Probably Ernest Banks.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. And now nobody ever plays two. If somebody's played two, something's gone horribly wrong.
Absolutely. Now it's just one game. A doubleheader, what they do is they empty the ballpark in the afternoon, bring them back at night, a new audience.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway.
It's changed. Not for the better, my friend.
People can find you, by the way, at www.missourinet.com, and they can also read your blog where you rant and rave there as well. In the meantime, sir...
I have a good picture of Bevo, the mascot for the Texas Longhorns, in the blog.
Okay, well, something to look forward to. In the meantime, lower your blood pressure, lower your blood pressure, and say those three magic words.
Hit the theme!
This is the Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program. Before we go, of course, we have time for one little item, and that would be the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Okay, this is just bizarre. In Haverstraw, New York, a man walked into a Taco Bell at around 2 p.m., pointed a gun directly at the cashier, demanded money, and then told the cashier to get on the floor. He then walked into the manager's office at the back of the store and asked for an employment application. The manager said no and told the guy to leave. He did, and without taking any money. Police are looking for him. He may have gone south of the border, but this guy's a little south of sanity. Why would someone walk into a place of employment waving a gun and then go and ask for a job? There's one reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, wait till it's late at night, get up on your rooftop, and scream from the top of your lungs that you love the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Just keep screaming till the cops come. And when the cops come, tell them too. We need to get the word out. The website, peteranthonyholder.com, where you'll find information and links on the guests on our program by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding data and program number, in this case 0010. Email me at peter@peteranthonyholder.com. You could also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder, and you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. Until next time, I'm Peter Anthony Holder. Again, tell all your friends about the show. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.